How did you happen to get in here?
I ran here. You scared the daylights out of me last night.
Seems like the truth shouldn't scare anybody, man or boy.
Thing getting you?
No. I'm just thinking about public reaction to all this.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Dragon King Dark, episode number 333. Thank you very much for joining us. You are entering a series called 100 of the Darkest Moments in Pop Culture History. We're well into the series now, and this isn't a series you have to listen to in any sort of order. We aren't ranking these in any kind of order or anything else, because how could you? These are different segments of pop culture. We've talked about everything from sports to TV to movies, and a lot about music. In fact, the last several of our shows have been about musical tragedies that have happened, deaths that have impacted the genre of popular music. And today's actually takes us back a little ways. We're going back in time to 1997, and it was a different time back then. A lot of things about mental health weren't on the forefront as they are now. We've talked a lot about that topic on recent shows as it has played into the story of these tragedies. Many of you are probably aware of the band NXS and the music of NXS. They were very popular back in that time period. And Michael Hutchence, the lead singer for NXS, died by hanging. And many of you probably think you know the story, but it's been one of those controversial stories that has been examined and re-examined. And we'll take a listen to a couple of news reports and how it was reported at the time. But let's go to actually a fairly recent article that I want to actually set the tone for today's show with. Well, maybe you don't know about the death of Michael Hutchence. This article is from last year, from November of 2021. It's written by Joe Taysom for the website faroutmagazine.co.uk. Again, that's faroutmagazine.co.uk. And the first two paragraphs really, I think, is important in what I want you to focus on this show, because again, this happened so long ago. It was before so many of the current modern, the ones we've talked about recently, like Linkin Park and Prince and those come to the forefront, Soundgarden, all that we've talked about on recent shows. This predated all that. And it was a different world where this was looked at in different ways. And I think it got really weirdly kind of shoehorned into this narrative that may not be correct. So Joe Taysom's article starts like this. Michael Hutchence's cause of death has been the source of speculation for decades. The fetishization of this topic has sold countless newspapers and fueled various documentaries, despite the truth seemingly acting as a secondary consideration. It is widely assumed that Hutchence's death resulted from an act of autoeroticism. However, the coroner's report categorically ruled out this possibility and stated, quote, "There is no forensic or other evidence to substantiate this suggestion. I therefore discount that manner of death." So you've probably heard about over the years this is, that's a very sensationalized cause of death. If it was true, many people weren't even aware of that as a thing that apparently people did, and it was attributed to, hey, Michael Hutchence's cause of death was this very, very strange thing to most people. As it turns out, well, not necessarily is any of that true. It was a sensationalized story for the most part. The magazine continues to say Hutchence's partner, Paula Yates, who was understandably distraught and grief-stricken after his death, first made the claims. At the time, Yates was desperate for answers and felt that it was in no way possible that he would have taken his own life. Yates stated that the absence of a suicide note established her belief that Hutchins' death was accidental. As Yates attempted to hypothesize on the circumstances around his death, she spoke publicly about his experimental habits in the bedroom and suggested that it was a ritualistic sex experiment gone wrong. However, there was never any evidence that backed up her comment. Now, as time has passed, the speculation has been treated as truth. So this all came from a grieving partner's attempts to try to make some sense of this. And then this happens many times. Many of you probably have some know of someone or in some way connected, have some sort of family or social connection to someone who has dealt with suicide. And no one ever wants to believe that that happened, well, that they would take their own life. Well, as we know now with more mental health awareness and more information coming out, that the story is much more complicated than that. And it's not as simple and as dirty a thing to talk about and to deny as it once was. We understand it's much more difficult and much, much more complicated than was ever previously given treatment to. And so you have these stories like the death of Michael Hutchins that falls into this very strange void of seemingly media preying on, you know, an already sensationalized story back in a time period where suicide was, you know, viewed as this very, very dirty thing that no one talked about. And it was a very personal failing and not a mental health perhaps issue or crisis or depression or something like that. There had to be another explanation, right? And so they come up sometimes with this apparently in this situation, a very strange conclusion. The article continues, says Yates was grieving, and rather than judging her comments from that perspective, Channel 4 created a documentary, In Excess, with Yates, in which he talked in detail about Hutchins' sexual appetite. This topic, understandably, became the talk of tabloid press. It was plastered all over the front pages, despite the coroner ruling out the possibility of his death being an outcome of autoeroticism. The coroner stated, quote, "On consideration of the entirety of the evidence, I am satisfied Hutchins was in a severe depressed state on the morning of November 22, 1997. Adding, this was due to a number of factors, including the relationship with Paula Yates and the pressure of the ongoing dispute with Sir Robert Geldof, combined with the effects of substances that he had ingested at the time, I am satisfied the cause of death was simply hanging." Sir Bob Geldof had prevented Yates from taking her daughter with Hutchins to Australia in order to visit the singer during the tour. The pressure of the situation had begun to beleaguer his mind, and for a moment he felt as though there was no way out. Hutchins spontaneously acted upon his emotion. Additionally, Hutchins had previously been prescribed Prozac a few weeks before his death to treat his depression. Furthermore, an analysis report of his blood showed he had alcohol, cocaine, Prozac, and other prescription drugs in his system. On the night of his death, Hutchins dined with his father before friends visited his hotel room before leaving at 5 a.m. the following morning. His friends later commented that Hutchins' mood was elevated, however pensive, when discussing court proceedings. Before taking his own life, Hutchins entered a heated conversation on the phone with Geldof, who claimed the singer was, quote, "hectoring and abusive and threatening." The fear of having his child taken away from him, combined with his crippling reliance on substances to distract him from proceedings, only enhanced the problems. Hutchins hid his depression from those closest to him, a factor that made it difficult to recognize how grave his situation has become. Meanwhile, the lack of a suicide note suggests an unmediated death, and then the mind-altering drugs he had consumed also led to the fatal incident. So, everything you may have thought you knew and had heard about the death of NXS lead singer Michael Hutchins, well, may not have been true at all. It may, in fact, actually be more in line with the other deaths we've talked about from this same sort of depressive episode, sometimes, not always, but sometimes combined with substance abuse, which, of course, many people or some people that deal with mental health issues, self-medicate, alcohol, or some other type of drugs. And as we have talked about many times, that when it was cool on our Patreon shows and stuff, we were very much advocates for mental health, that the mental health industry itself and the drugs they provide, well, they're chock full of problems also. It's not nearly as simple as those who don't have to struggle with this might want it to believe. We like to believe that we live in a world where medical science is advanced to such a high degree, the pinnacle of everywhere we've come as society is now here, and we have science on our side, and we have a giant corporation, giant pharmaceutical corporations who have got all this figured out. And as it turns out, it might not be as clear cut as many people who aren't in the know might realize. And that is the thing I think we need to, all people that deal with mental health issues need to advocate for, is the fact that this very simple and very pensive call somebody for help, well, it's not that simple. And these deaths need examined and re-examined, and if there's ways to prevent them, those need to be buried out rather than assigning just a simple, oh, well, you know, it was drugs, or, oh, well, it was, you know, in this case, something else entirely. That's not fair to any of the millions of other people who struggle with these same things. But Michael Hutchence was born January 22nd, 1960, and he was an Australian musician, singer, songwriter, and actor. He co-founded the rock band NXS, and I know I'm pronouncing that NXS like excessive. They spelled it INXS. Undoubtedly, if you're at all familiar with popular music, you're familiar with this very successful band from back in that time period. They had several worldwide hits. They sold 75 million records worldwide, and he was the lead singer and lyricist from 1977 until his death in 1997. Yes, NXS was around a lot longer than people actually remember they were. Hutchence had a string of love affairs with prominent actresses, models, and singers, and his private life was often reported in the Australian and international press. Yes, he was a favorite of the tabloids. In July of 1996, Hutchence and English television presenter Paula Yates had a daughter, and that's the daughter we were talking about there, and they become a very heated custody battle about it. And on the morning of November 22nd, 1997, Michael Hutchence was found dead in his hotel room in Sydney. His death was reported by the New South Wales coroner to be the result of suicide by hanging. But as we have found out, and most people think, and most people still realize, when I, you know, was making out the list, you know, Tanya and I from When It Was Cool, we kind of come up with these names of these dark moments, pop culture history to cover. When I saw that, I thought, okay, yeah, I remember it was, you know, that was the hanging incident, and there was much tabloid speculation about it and stuff. So even I, you know, didn't really know. I just went on what the media had to say. Well, it turns out it's a lot more complicated than that. Hutchence and NXS went on a world tour to support the April 1997 release of Elegantly Wasted. The final 20th anniversary tour was to occur in Australia in November and December. And during the tour, Paula Yates planned to visit Hutchence with their daughter and Yates' three other children, but Bob Geldof had taken legal action to prevent the business. Now, we've mentioned Bob Geldof several times. You've probably heard this name. Bob Geldof was an English singer, songwriter, actor, political activist. He was very prominent in the 1970s. Lead singer of the Boomtown Rats and all that. I mean, he's very heavily associated with the music industry. And he, of course, is, you know, was behind Live Aid and things of that nature, very well-known political activist. He was the guy that started Pink and Pink Floyd's movie The Wall, that Bob Geldof. That's the same person we're talking about here. So very hugely influential in the music industry. And as it turns out, he played a role, be it agitator or be it just, you know, being protective of Paula Yates' child, whatever his input was, he was nevertheless involved in this death of Michael Hutchence, at least a factor in the story. So let's take a listen to how news reported this at the time. We'll take our mid-show break and come back and, again, get another perspective on it and talk more about the death of Michael Hutchence, who was aged 37 years old when he was found hanging in Sydney, Australia, November 22nd, 1997.
And soccer showdown, the Roos set to take on Iran. Good evening, Angela Pearman with ABC News. The international music industry is in shock with the death of rock star Michael Hutchence. The body of the In Excess lead singer was discovered in a Sydney hotel room late this morning. Police won't confirm the cause of death, but they've taken a leather belt into possession for scientific examination.
The Double Bay Ritz-Carlton, the Sydney Hotel to the Stars, where today Michael Hutchence's body was found. Although security at the hotel was kept tight, the world media had been tipped off early. Then came the official confirmation.
The body of an Australian citizen who has been a resident in England for some time was discovered in the hotel on the fifth floor. The body was found just before noon by a member of the hotel staff.
They wouldn't rule out suicide.
Detectives have taken into possession a leather belt for scientific examination.
Hutchence had spent last night in Sydney's eastern suburbs, having dinner with his parents at this restaurant.
His father at one stage was holding his hand and he was, you could see them, they were just so happy to see their son after a long time probably. And he even said to Susan, one of our waitresses, that he'd be here for 1 month.
Hutchence was in Australia preparing for the In Excess 20th anniversary nationwide tour. The band had been in the ABC Sydney studio all week rehearsing. They arrived as normal today, waiting for their singer, only knowing that he was missing. The group was eventually told of the death late this afternoon, choosing to stay locked in their rehearsal room rather than face the waiting media. They eventually left the studio one at a time, protected by a private security guard. They were followed by road crew members and associates, obviously stunned by the news. The music industry was just as shocked.
I was totally taken by surprise. Not in my wildest imaginings would I have thought somebody who had so much to live for would die.
To be sitting around the Mondrian pool, having drinks, and everyone was so happy, and I said to Michael, I've never seen you more relaxed, more happier in your life. And he said, I have never been more happier in my life.
Police spent most of the afternoon trying to inform Hutchence's family. Late today, contact was made with his Australian-based relatives and with partner Paula Yates, who was understood to have been en route to Australia when the death happened. Phil Kafkaloudis, ABC News, Sydney.
At its peak, In Excess stormed the world charts. Nowadays, though, their music has been overtaken by younger alternative bands. Just last month, Hutchence said the band's recent concerts were the best he's ever done.
Well done, Ross!
In Excess have been the quintessential Australian band. They formed in Perth in the late 70s, young rockers who worked their way up through the tough Australian pub scene.
We all have our wilderness years, whether it's drugs, alcohol, lack of fame, whatever. I need you
tonight. They hit it big in 1987, their multi-million selling album Kick spawning 5 top 10 singles in the United States. The band toured constantly across the world, performing to record crowds, selling 20 million records. Philip Mortlock was their record company representative during their heyday.
Their significance on the Australian music scene is immeasurable. I mean, they have broken so many records and they've achieved so many great heights internationally and locally. It'd be impossible to know where to start.
Hutchence was always seen as the focus of the band, a truculent rock star with a style similar to that of Rolling Stones lead singer Mick Jagger and the late Doors frontman Jim Morrison. But record sales for the group's style of strident funk rock anthems had fallen in recent years. The critics had dismissed them. The band members became famous for being celebrities, none more so than Hutchence. In recent years, his sex life was more famous than his songs. Romances with fellow Australian pop star Kylie Minogue and supermodel Helena Christensen. 2 years ago, amid a media frenzy, he linked up with Paula Yates, the former wife of Live Aid star Bob Geldof. And last year, the pair had a child together. Lisa McLean, ABC News.
South Korea has formally announced it is...
We depend on Patreon support for our website and podcast network.
In order to continue these podcasts you enjoy, we need you to visit whenitwascool.com and pledge at least $1. You'll gain access to lots of exclusive podcasts, newsletters, and more. Sign up is quick, simple, and can be canceled at any time. whenitwascool.com and click any Patreon link. Thank you.
The anniversary world tour.
Staff found the body in a room at the exclusive hotel at Double Bay this morning. It's understood Hutchins was found hanging from a door.
Detectives have taken into possession a leather belt for scientific examination. It would appear that there are no suspicious circumstances.
Hutchins had been in Australia since Wednesday night.
Good to be back, Mike.
Yeah, great.
He was here to prepare for INXS's upcoming concert tour due to start on Thursday.
Any surprises in store?
The early show?
Yeah.
When isn't there ever?
Paramedics were immediately called after the 37-year-old's body was discovered, but there was nothing they could do. First police on the scene sealed off the room so a full scientific examination could be made.
There were a number of prescribed medications located at the scene, and they were taken by the scientific police.
The haunt of the rich and famous, the Ritz-Carlton, was quickly besieged by the media, management refusing to comment. The rest of the band were told of the tragedy while visiting the ABC studios. Late this afternoon, the rock star's body was taken away with a police escort to the morgue at Glebe. Hutchins' body will now undergo an extensive autopsy to determine precisely how he died. A full report will then be prepared for the coroner. Simon Boder, National 9 News.
The death of Michael Hutchins has stunned the music world, both here in Australia and overseas. Before his success, there was the usual hard start that many singers and bands encounter, playing the pubs in Perth with the Farris Brothers. Fame as INXS only followed years later.
The last jam for Michael Hutchins and the band. This session was taped just 24 hours ago. INXS back together at home in a Sydney studio, playing the music that made them stars worldwide. Joking, teasing and in charge. Hutchins out front of the band that had stuck together for 20 years, fine-tuning ahead of a special anniversary tour.
That's too perfect. In fact, can we do it again and mess it up a bit?
The tour had been eagerly anticipated by the music world. Tonight, though, just shock.
It's just a very, very sad day for everyone who loved music, and in particular, INXS.
I said to Michael, I've never seen you more relaxed, more happier in your life. And he said, I have never been more happier in my life.
It's just horrific news, and I'm in shock.
INXS began as the Farris Brothers in the late 1970s, a pub band in Perth. The six good mates did the hard yards, moved east, and by the mid-80s dominated the national scene. Listen like thieves. 1987 was their breakthrough year. The album Kick sent INXS's fortunes rocketing internationally. Sensation. More albums and tours followed in the late 80s and early 90s, but it was the private life of Michael Hutchins that won greater attention. Romances with beautiful women, singer Kylie Minogue and model Helena Christensen. Then the affair with the wife of fellow rock star Bob Geldof. In Paula Yates, Hutchins said he'd found a soulmate, and last year came a baby girl, Heavenly Harani Tiger Lily. The tabloids devoured the Hutchins-Yates relationship, their story fueled by the couple's antics, an ugly custody battle over Paula's children to Bob Geldof, then a police drug raid on their London home. The charges were later dropped. But that was all behind them. There was talk of marriage and possibly a permanent move to Australia. But tragically, it's understood Paula Yates, with their daughter, is in mid-flight to Australia, due later tonight. Michael Usher, National 9 News.
On the morning of November 22, 1997, Michael Hutchins, age 37, was found dead in room 524 of the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Double Bay, Sydney, Australia. Actress Kim Wilson was the last person to see Michael Hutchins alive when she visited him in his hotel room the previous evening. Bob Geldof and Yates each gave police statements on the phone calls they exchanged with him on the morning of his death. However, they did not volunteer their phone records. Yates' statement on November 26 indicated that she had informed Michael Hutchence of Geldof's girls' custody hearings being adjourned until December 17th, which meant that Yates would not be able to bring their child to Australia for a visit as previously intended. According to Yates, Hutchence, quote, was frightened and couldn't stand a minute more without his baby. He was terribly upset, and he said, I don't know how I'll live without seeing my child. Yates indicated that Hutchence was going to phone Bob Geldof to let the girls come to Australia. Geldof's police statements and evidence to the coroner indicated he did receive a call from Hutchence, who was, quote, hectoring and abusive and threatening during their phone conversation. The occupant in the room next to Hutchence heard a loud male voice and swearing about 5 a.m. The coroner was satisfied that this was Hutchence arguing with Geldof. At 9:54 a.m. on November 22nd, Hutchence spoke with a former girlfriend, Michelle Bennett. According to Bennett, Hutchence was crying, sounded upset, and told her he needed to see her. Bennett arrived at his hotel room at about 10:40 a.m., but there was no response. Michael Hutchence's body was discovered by a hotel maid at 11:50 a.m. Police reported that Hutchence was found in a kneeling position facing the door. He had a snakeskin belt tied in a knot on the automatic door closer at the top of the door. He had strained his head forward into the loop so hard that the buckle had broken. On February the 6th, 1998, after an autopsy and coroner's inquest, New South Wales State Coroner Derek Hand presented his report. The report ruled that Hutchence's death was suicide while depressed and under the influence of alcohol and other drugs. An analysis report of Hutchence's blood indicated the presence of alcohol, cocaine, Prozac, and other prescription drugs. In producing his coroner's report, Hand specifically considered the suggestions of accidental death, coupled with the fact that Hutchence had left no suicide note. But he had discounted them based on substantial evidence presented to the contrary. In a 1999 interview on 60 Minutes in a documentary film on Channel 4, Yates claimed that Hutchence's death might have resulted from autoerotic asphyxiation. And there come the main story that, of course, most everybody wants to remember and seems to remember. This claim contradicted her previous statements to police investigators and to the coroner. On November 27, 1997, Hutchence's funeral was held at St. Andrew's Cathedral in Sydney. His casket was carried out of the cathedral by members of NXS and by his younger brother, Rhett. Never Tear Us Apart, which of course was one of their huge hits, was played in the background. Nick Cave, a friend of Hutchence, performed his 1997 song, Into My Arms, during the funeral and requested that television cameras be switched off. Rhett claimed in his 2004 book, Total Excess, that on the previous day at the funeral home, Yates had put a gram of heroin into Hutchence's pocket. So, of course, as with many of these stories, there is lots of tales and stuff of substance abuse. And again, we know this, there's nothing inconsistent about that, and the struggles of self-medication and things of that nature, especially, again, in a time period where we're talking, you know, 25 years almost ago that this happened, as a completely different era in mental health and mental health understanding and addiction treatment and things of that nature. Rolling Stone magazine, rollingstone.com, in their website says a new documentary on NXS Michael Hutchence, 12 Things We Learned. And this article came out in January of 2020, so it's just a couple years old. Mystify tells the late singer's story through home videos and personal recollection from friends, family, and himself in archival interviews. It's by Corey Groh. And the article is pretty in-depth and everything and goes into a lot of the same stuff we've previously talked about and discussed. Again, a different look at the story that most people feel they knew about and had a handle on, but really it's one of those stories that the popular version seems to be the incorrect one. NXS was a huge deal. They were a huge, very successful band. Again, they were around a lot longer than what people give him credit for. And again, another thing that's kind of forgotten in the story is Michael Hutchence was somewhat of an aspiring actor. He had actually several roles in really some smaller productions and stuff, but he was getting some acting work and was, you know, he was a pop culture star. He was absolutely a pop culture star and not, you know, at 37 years old, still presumably had a considerable way ahead of him. Now, their biggest hits really did come from, you know, the 1980s. Kick, I think, is one that, you know, that was released in October of 1987. That was their big breakthrough in a lot of places, especially the United States. It was Atlantic Records, I think, was the record label that Kick was on. Album peaked at number one in Australia, number three on the U.S. Billboard 200. It was an upbeat, confident album, says their Wikipedia page. Had yielded four top 10 U.S. singles, and you probably recognize every one of these from getting heavy radio play on you know, your top 40 stations back in that time period. MTV, Need You Tonight, Devil Inside, New Sensation, and Never Tear Us Apart. And all those, again, were top 10 U.S. singles. Need You Tonight peaked number two in the U.K., number three in Australia, and 10 in France. And the NXS toured heavily behind this album, as you can imagine. And most people, I think, become really aware of them at that point in time. They'd been a band for 10 years at that point in time. You know, surprisingly so to many people, just that their success had really come overseas outside the United States. The video for the 1987 NXS track Mediate replicated a Bob Dylan video. Some of us remember that from the MTV era. In September 1988, the band swept the MTV Video Music Awards with the video for Need You Tonight with the Meditate ending in there, which was one in five different categories. Kick was by far NXS's best-selling album of all time. And from there, they continued to make music for the next 10 years. I mean, they existed 10 years before Kick and existed 10 years after Kick, but most of it, of course, was from riding on that success. 1990 through 1997, they put out albums like X and Elegantly Wasted, and those were, again, very popular overseas, especially in Australia, but not as much so in the United States. Although, I mean, as a touring act, they were still a very big deal. They performed July 13th, 1991 at Wembley Stadium in front of 74,000 fans. And it's not many bands that, you know, often play in front of that many people. We, you know, if you visit us over at whenitwascool.com, you know, we go to a lot of concerts. And recently, you know, two of the biggest concerts we've attended and reviewed have been the Rolling Stones concert at Nissan Stadium in Nashville, and then the Def Leppard, Motley Crue, Joan Jett concert in Nashville, Tennessee as well. And those were around the 40,000 mark. So double that almost. And that's, you know, the NXS Wembley Stadium show. So they were a giant, very successful band. And this was, again, several years after their most popular album. So there, this wasn't like an irrelevant band. They've suddenly become irrelevant. While not as on top here in the United States as they used to be, they were really still turning out hits in the rest of the world. In fact, in 1997, what was considered their comeback album was Elegantly Wasted, and that was, of course, the tour where Michael Hutchence died. And it did okay. It charted in Australia and Canada and France and the U.K., not so much. Well, actually, it did break the top 50 in here in the United States, number 41, but still it was not what you would call a, you know, a blowaway success or anything. But the death of Hutchence did get a lot of play here, again, because of the tabloid aspects of it, Paula Yates' involvement and Bob Geldof's you know, involvement in the whole story of the auto asphyxiation and all that, autoerotic asphyxiation, and how that took off in the press. So very tabloid stuff, very, you know, seedy stuff, very sensationalistic story. And as it turns out, probably not in any way based in reality. So it's certainly one of the darkest moments in pop culture history, to be sure. And it's one of those stories I think has been gotten wrong or mistold or told in some sensationalistic manner that needs revisited and needs rediscussed and looked at in a different manner. I know many of you who are from this generation, the generation of the stuff we cover at When It Was Cool, you remember NXS pretty fondly. Those late high school years for many of us, that was, you know, a peak time for NXS, peak time for MTV and VH1 and Night Tracks on TBS and things like that, where we saw this unfolding at the time and heard it constantly in rotation on radio. And it was very much the voice of popular music at the time. So it bears another look back, and to get the story right, you know, this go around, not go with, you know, whatever the tabloid at the supermarket checkout, the whatever, you know, photos the paparazzi can get of it, and throw some click, what we now call clickbait headline. That's what they were doing in the tabloids way back when. And just telling a sensationalized story just to get you to buy their news rag. Well, yeah, I think a man's life is worth more than just that. And I think it's time we actually told the story correctly. And that is, as far as we know today, the story of Michael Hutchence of NXS. And maybe they were a favorite of yours, maybe not, whatever. But the story still has a different, casted a different light, knowing the facts as we know them now. And especially, as we begin to be more, at least understand or attempting to understand mental health more so than it's just some closeted, dirty little secret nobody wants to talk about, and the nature of suicide has really changed the narrative of that over the years as well. So that's Michael Hutchence. That's his story. That's NXS. And this is Dragon King Dark. It's been episode number 333. We are heard at WrestlingObserver.com, Figure4Online.com, Dark Matter Digital Network, and, of course, home base of WhenItWasCool.com. We are supported by Patreon. You hear this show because other people have decided to become a Patreon supporter. And when it reaches a certain critical point, you may not hear this show because they're the ones that keep it going. So if you enjoy this show, you enjoy this series, you've learned something from this series. And again, once we finish it, we'll change course and do something different again, as this show has done many times in the past, keep it fresh and relevant. Well, we need you to become a Patreon supporter at whenitwascool.com. Go to whenitwascool.com, bookmark us. That's the best thing you can do to start with. We have plenty of free podcasts, plenty of articles, plenty of stuff to get you in there. And I think once you start listening to our various shows, you'll want to do more. You'll want to hear more. And we have a catalog waiting for you to explore of almost 2,000 podcasts dealing with retro pop culture. That's the great thing about retro pop culture. Hey, it's evergreen. Don't get old. A biography still is relevant today as if I recorded it last year or record it next year. We're talking about popular culture as it used to be, as it was when you grew up and enjoyed your favorite TV show, movie, sports, comic book, toy, all that good stuff. It's there at whenitwascool.com. That's what we do. Hope you'll check us out. Hope you become a member. And I'll see you here again soon with another show.
If you liked what you heard, go to whenitwascool.com.
This is the sound of the 80s. Everybody's looking for it, and we've got it.
And hit that Patreon button.
If you'll excuse me, I need to go buy a new Cyndi Lauper CD and have myself a little cry.